All right, guys, we're here at a new episode. This is Comadres y Comics. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hey, guys, how are you doing? ¿Qué onda?
¿Qué onda?
Oh, a lot onda.
Órale.
But, Magic the Gathering came out with a new set called Ultimate Masters. It's not in standard, and I believe we've talked about it before, how me and Kristen play Magic the Gathering.
They call you nerds.
OMG, it's almost like I work at a comic store. But Ultimate Masters is actually the last Master set that Magic is going to be doing.
Oh, is it ever?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's why it's called Ultimate Masters.
Oh.
But yeah, this is the last Master set that they're going to be doing.
I had no idea.
Or at least that they claim that they're
okay,
going to be
right,
doing.
Yeah.
They could be lying to us, right?
They could, like, maybe 10 years down
like
the line.
Like when they lie that they're never going to reprint those certain cards, and then they do.
Well, the reserve list, supposedly.
Yeah.
If it's not on the reserve list, it's definitely probably going to get reprinted at some point. If it is on the reserve list, it's never going to get reprinted. But Ultimate Masters is, one, it's kind of expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So a box itself is going now for $335.
Yeah.
My God.
Plus tax.
For a box of 36 packs of 10 or 15 cards each.
10.
10.
Yeah. No, 15.
15? I don't know.
10 or 15.
10 or 15.
10 or 15 cards each. And a single pack is going for $13.99.
Yep.
But the thing that, what makes the Master sets so valuable is that they reprint a bunch of expensive cards. Cards that haven't been reprinted in a while. So stuff like Karakoras, or which is a legendary land that taps for one white, or you tap it and you can return a legendary creature to your hand.
Ooh,
from your graveyard.
That's good.
No, not even from your graveyard. You just tap it and you can return a legendary creature to your hand or a legendary creature that an opponent controls back to their hand.
Right, off of
basically. It's OP, it's actually banned in Commander, and it's only played in Legacy. But it's because of that ability.
Rude!
Yeah, it's a very rude effect.
Uh-huh.
It would be so much fun if I could play it in Commander. But there's a reason it was banned, because it was too good.
Broken, as the kids say.
Broken,
yeah. Are we doing kid lingo? Because I had to brush up on my lingo.
It's gamer lingo.
Yeah, I mean, so it was broken. But they're reprinting it. They're reprinting a bunch of stuff like Noble Hierarch, which is a card that was not seeing less value than $90. And is now the cheapest it will ever be, which is at $40.
Wow.
So it's still going for like a lot, but not a lot.
I have a box set aside for myself that I asked Eddie to give me for Christmas. And I'm really excited to open it. And I haven't played in a really long time because on Wednesdays I've just had a lot of stuff going on that I need to take care of and haven't had a chance to just sit down and enjoy playing without thinking that I had a million things to do on the back of my mind. But I'm excited to open this box and to start trying to ramp up my Kumena deck.
Yeah. Oh, ooh. Not only that, the reason also these... the set, especially the boxes itself, are selling for so much and going for so much is that because they have a single sealed box topper card, which is basically this is the first time they're reprinting some cards with borderless art. So
what?
Yeah,
that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and they look really really cool.
Oh,
and so some of these cards are seeing. First of all, foils for the first time, or full arts for the first time.
Really?
So,
wow.
So they're going for a lot of money.
Now,
all I know is that the most expensive one is worth $300.
For a card?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Snapcaster Mage.
Wow.
I memorized this list.
Well, I mean, I'm not a Magic the Gathering player yet, maybe. but I did collect comic character cards back in like the late 90s, and I had like the the foil ones, and mm-hmm. I mean, the master, I think there was a master's one. They were amazing. I mean, just collecting them is awesome. And if you had the ones without the border, that mm-hmm. really stood out. Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of those cards aren't worth anything.
No, yeah. I know. I mean, I have them because they're so cool. I mean, I know they're not worth anything. Oh my God,
when we were having that sale at Hadi Ho, remember the cards? We would put those things out by the hundreds.
So many.
And by the hundreds, and people would come and like buy them up because they just really, really liked them. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that you do because you like, because it's not really worth anything. And mm-hmm. we had collections and... Mm-hmm. But it was cool. You know what I liked about those is you could read like all the demographics.
Character info.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
On the back. And yeah, everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was cool.
That was fun. But yeah, this is awesome. I mean, the first time foils, they must look amazing. And they with do. The new technology really cool. now with printing, mm-hmm. I can only imagine how amazing they must look.
Oh, they look really, really nice. Yeah. My box topper wasn't very good. I just got Lava Claw Reaches. I wanted Cavern of Souls or basically anything but the one I got.
Yeah. Isn't that how it works sometimes?
That's always how it works.
Well, that's actually some really good ke onda because it is all the talk right now in the Magic community. And so for any of you out there that are also Magic players, hit us up with any good cards that you are getting out of your packs. We want to hear you're getting.
Mm-hmm. And post a picture up. I'd love to see them.
Yeah. Maybe we can trade.
Because she will gladly trade her card that she got for your Cavern of Souls.
All right, guys, what time is it?
It's beer time.
Excellent. What are we drinking today?
Well, today we are drinking Luminous, which, that sounded really nice. I imagined like rays of sunshine coming out from it, from the fact that it's called Luminous. It's from the Great Notion Brewing Company in Portland, Oregon, which is one that I hadn't heard of before. I was just there, and they have, it's like the mecca of craft brewing there. So, it smells really good.
The can is really cool. Brewing?
Yes. There is a, you can't throw a rock without hitting a craft brewery or a hipster beard. So, Luminous is a sour. Oh, here we go with the sours, Sarah. Sour hazy IPA with malted oats, milk sugar, vanilla beans, and fresh strawberries. Now, I feel like these are all lies because it's a sour hazy IPA.
You're whispering sweet nothings to me because that's what it's going to.
The beer pours a cloudy bright orange with just a splash of pink when held to the light. Oh, yeah, look it. She's holding it up and I can see it. It's actually very pretty. You can there's like a separation of color from the bottom and the top.
Yeah.
And it has an ABV of 5.5%. So is this also from Compton Eric?
Yes, Compton Eric hooked it up again.
It actually smells really good. It's very light smelling.
Yes, it's I think I smell the hint of strawberry in there for sure.
It does smell fruity. It smells very light.
Yeah, I can smell the strawberry.
It doesn't smell like an IPA at all.
Well, I took a sip and I feel like there's a malty taste.
Malty?
Okay, you got to take a sip. But it does have that slight reddish hue. It almost looks like the inside of a blood orange.
Yeah. Okay. So the first taste.
Pinching her. Squeezing her face.
Yes, the face I'm making from the first drink is as if I put a wedge of lemon in my mouth because that's about the intensity of sour that it is. But it's actually good. I like it.
This is Jen, and I reluctantly agree. Because all the other sours we've had, I believe I best described it as the taste of throw up. The taste, that sours taste like beer that you threw up.
Actually, now that you mentioned
beer that, I threw up.
Now that you mentioned that, it reminds me of another beer that we reviewed that you said the exact same thing, that it was a little reminiscent of throw up or vomit. And I told you that it tasted like pulque.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then you were like, no, it's not. And I was like, yeah, because pulque from where I'm from, it's like a, it's an agave fermented drink.
Yeah.
A drink of the noble gods or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the malty taste I was just describing, I actually took another sip and it's the pulque that I initially was catching instead of the maltiness. So when if you drink this beer right now, it actually tastes like pulque from Puebla, Mexico, Tlatenango.
Wow. I can drink that.
I've never had that before. Mm-hmm. But this, I'm not a fan of sours. And I've never heard of a sour IPA before. But I like this. I could actually drink this whole thing and enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, yay.
And I actually don't mind the little bit of sour aftertaste I'm getting from this. Right. Because I can definitely taste the fruity tones to it.
Yeah, oh, yes. So, I can too.
And the thing with the most other sours is that the taste of sourness is so overwhelming. It reminds me of bile. So that's this is why I always say that they taste like taste like throw up because it tastes like bile. this does not. This is like almost like eating sour candy.
Oh yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah.
And I can appreciate that. Yeah. I like sour candy.
I do too.
Yeah. So I this is like the sour candy of beer.
Nice.
And I actually really like this. I could drink this all by
myself. I feel like I can taste the fresh strawberry taste as well. At the end
when I let it sit on my tongue. Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And this one I let out to sit out a little bit more than having it on ice.
Uh-huh.
Just because I felt that it would have like a better taste. Mm. Not it wouldn't like the cold wouldn't overpower the taste. Yes. Yeah,
no, I know what you're talking about.
Kind of a not too cold but not room temperature either. Mm-hmm. Just kind of an average. I think that lets it sit in better. But are we ready to review?
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a full.
Okay, so this is Kristen and I think I'm giving it a full as well. So that's actually a 4 out of 5. A partial, I don't think it, I was maybe a 3.5, but probably closer to a 4. So I'll stay with the 4.
And by like the third sip, I feel like it tastes like sweet tarts. Yeah.
So it definitely evolves as on your tongue as you take more sips.
Absolutely. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to give it a full. Because I really do actually enjoy this a lot.
Success. Yay! Fools across the board.
Sarah, you finally found us a sour beer we like.
Yay! I'm so excited, guys. Thank you. All right, guys. We're reviewing what book?
Well, today we have a special treat of two books that we are reviewing. One is it's an image book, but it also is a very weird, like it says it's an original graphic novel, but it came to us in like a soft cover. It is larger than usual as far as a trade goes in size. It's taller, probably not wider. And it is kind of
it's wider.
Oh, okay, it is wider. It's kind of a short story, I guess, but it was marketed to us as an original graphic novel.
Like a fancy magazine, basically.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. And then we have a self-published book from another creator from the Sketchy Bugs at the Comic Bug. And that one is called, we'll start with that one. That one is called Totec. Excuse me. Totec and His Fantasy. And we were able to, and it's written by Armando Carrillo. And actually, it was this year. It has on the cover 2018. So it's fairly new. And we, meaning Sarah and I, because Jen wasn't there, were able to talk to Armando at the LA Comic Con this year. And he had actually a fascinating story as far as his history in the comic book industry. You were speaking to him in
Spanish
a little bit before I came and joined your conversation. But do you remember a little bit about what he was saying?
Yes. His son is the artist of the book. And he actually wrote comic books in Mexico for Marvel and other bigger names in the comic book industry. So he's been in the business for a long time, since like the 70s, I believe. So I believe because there wasn't during the economical kind of fluctuation in the country, he actually immigrated here to the United States and trying to rekindle the comic book industry and try to get into that aspect of work.
So
that was really interesting to me. I'm like, why you work with Marvel? I mean, you know, you have a history of comic books and so forth. So that was really impressive. So that's how we came to get this book into our possession.
Totec. So,
Totec.
The it's what, like a Aztec, fantasy slash.
To me, how it looked like is if there was a version of Latino Afrofuturism, this is what it could be like.
Well, see, that puts things in perspective for me.
And so. Because the book itself is set in some distant future in a distant land that is being colonized by human beings. But it's very much set in Aztec and Mayan mythology and style that it's very much a potential of what Latinx futurism could be like. Specifically if Latinos... Because, and this is a thing that I've always been annoyed by in sci-fi and fantasy, is that Latinos aren't depicted in the future. Sci-fi itself has a very strong basically, there's no room for people of color in the future, is what I have come to see in most of sci-fi works. Kind of like what a lot of people, when... people of color criticize sci-fi and stuff like that for being so white.
Yeah.
There's just a what happened? Like, when people are just like, oh, there's, like, of course it's white people. Like there's no room for people of color in the future. And I'm just like, do you hear yourself? Like, what the hell happened to all the black people, all the Latinos, all the Asians? What... Did we just fucking disappear? They got
breeded out.
did the gringos finally just pull the trigger? Or like what? Well, like what's going on? But it's still very much a prevalent thing. And of course there's Afrofuturism now that was like helped pioneered by Octavia Butler. But there isn't really kind of a Latino version of that. And so this is kind of what I got the feeling of for. And I actually really like the detail in the art for it. I very much like Totec and his fantasy because it was a bit of that kind of that sci-fi futurism mixed with Latino heritage as well as kind of a Conan the Barbarian.
I definitely get
yes,
Conan.
Yes, absolutely. The whole gladiator kind of. Yeah.
And so, I can appreciate that because I actually am kind of fun of the like, of the Conan series and stuff like that. I like kind of like the like kind of almost like a Frank Frazetta artwork feel to
yes,
it.
Yeah, so, you're right. Absolutely, yeah. You're right.
So I really really like this. So while I was reading it, it's a bit slow to begin with.
But do you think that's because it was written at first in Spanish?
Was it?
Well, I'm assuming that because, like she said, it was a little slow starting off.
Mm-hmm.
So I assumed,
I think so. A little bit, but I also think it's because I think there's definitely different modes of storytelling going on. Because you mentioned that the writer is Mexican, right?
Yes.
And I've, just from my experience reading Mexican literature, and basically literature outside of non-Western lens, they tend to be a little bit slower, just how storytelling is done. Simply because we have a history of oral storytelling and how you kind of build up to things. You don't immediately, when you're telling a story, you don't immediately go into like, oh, this is what happened. You build up to it. And this is kind of what I saw with this going on, is that it was building up to the action.
Yeah. For me, I wanted to love it, but then I got stuck on fantasy's garter belt and I couldn't see past it. Because actually, Totec is a warrior.
Yeah.
And Totec. Fantasy is his love interest.
Yes. The name of his love interest is Fantasy. And you don't even really get this until the end where you see concept art.
Yes. Because I was... In the beginning, there is an outside of the Totec story. There is a story of these kids, but they don't really look like kids.
No.
Going to their... grandfather's or father's house, or I don't remember, Uncle Walter. And so they go, and the winner, they race there, and the winner gets to choose the type of story that is being told. And the woman, I don't know what her name is, but
Fantasy.
Oh, that's Fantasy?
No, Olga.
Oh, yeah, Olga, yeah.
I'm like, I'm just all Fantasy.
Olga. She's like, I want a love story. And so I'm reading the story that Uncle Walter is telling, and I'm like, where's the love story? There's violence and death and dismemberment, but where's the freaking love story?
That's true, that's true. And like you were saying, it's a different paced story, which... Yeah. Now hearing you describe that makes me have a whole different perspective on the whole story itself.
Yeah.
But the artwork is severely detailed. I mean, I don't know how long it took for him to draw these panels, because they're amazing.
And I actually really like the coloring.
Yes. Three times as long as it took him to draw Totec's abs.
Okay, so the men drawn in this is very much kind of a... It's like the 90s fused with Frazetta artwork.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
And that's both a compliment and a damnation at the same time. Because I really do like the artwork, but maybe tone down on the swelling, on the swelling muscles,
like,
kind of thing.
They went to the Rob Liefeld School of Art.
The thing is, some of those muscles are accurate. Yeah. So that's why I said it's
And there's feet.
And there's feet. And there's well-drawn feet.
Yeah.
And hands, so everything is at least kind of proportionate.
Yeah.
So, like I said, a praise and a damnation at the same time. It looks like they're constantly flexing. And I...
Yes. And covered in baby oil.
And covered in baby oil.
So, what we have here is just the first issue, because there's only one issue available right now.
Yeah.
The
only one issue available, yes.
But... The actual hue of the coloring of the panels is really an interesting choice, because they go with kind of a pastel reddish hue, which you wouldn't think for like Gladiator story, but it actually works very well. Like really well. It's almost like it's all covered in like dried blood, like lightly grazed blood over. I don't know. It's very...
Like there's a red mist of blood hanging over.
Right.
It fits very well into the fantasy setting.
Yes, absolutely. Agreed.
All I could think with this last page what's the other one? Tomek. Where he's like, the voiceover is gladiators fight, and he's like, whoever fights against me dies. All I could think when I was looking at this with all these bulging muscles and veins and everything is his testicles are so small. Because he is juicing night and freaking day.
Wow.
Oh my God.
So, because this is just one issue, are we ready to review it?
Sure.
Sure.
This is Sarah, and I'm gonna do two conchas.
Okay. This is Kristen, and I am also going to do two conchas. I really would have liked to get the love story that Uncle Walter promised me. But I will definitely read more to see if I can get more of that story.
Yes.
I'm going to give it two as well, because I was very impressed with it, and I do like it. But the Frazetta 90s artwork is a little off-putting, and I can get that. Like, there's a reason that art style didn't survive the 90s.
It survived, and it is living a prosperous life in our 50 cent bin.
Yeah. And people's nostalgia is very, very strong. But I want to see where it goes. I'm interested in the love story as well, because I am a sucker for it. But I also want to see what more he can do with the kind of Latino futurism he's got going on there. Because I like the giant detailed bugs that people are riding on. I like their outfits. None of them look like teenagers. They all look all look like
porn stars.
Like 25-year-old men who were juiced the fuck out. So there is that, but it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm always a sucker for a prettily drawn woman, and there's some very pretty women in there.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. So what are we reviewing now, guys?
So our next book is the Image one that I was talking about, and it's called The Terrible Elizabeth Doom Against the Devils in Suits. And this is actually written and drawn by, his last name is Arabson, but he doesn't have, he actually has a first name that I wrote down somewhere, but it's not here in the book, so I guess that's his creative choice to talk about. Jen is trying to look. Oh, in the back. There it is. I'm like, is it there? No. Okay, so anyway, he is I wrote it down somewhere, but I'll try to find it right now. But he's a cartoonist from Brazil. So he's Brazilian. So he's Latinx. He's just not Hispanic. He speaks Portuguese. And he has done a lot of work, cartoonist work for newspapers. And his comic debut is this particular book here that we're reading. And it was selected for the PROAC grant in 2014 and released in 2016 by IHQ Studios. And here it's also being supported by Image. The book was nominated for an HQMIX award in 2017. And so this book is about Elizabeth Doom, D-U-M-N, who is a strong, rebellious girl and determined to make her own way. Good thing, too, because her father long ago promised her to the devil, and he's come to claim what's his. Part horror adventure, part surreal dreamscape, this original graphic novel features the amazing artwork of new Brazilian sensation Arabson Assis. Oh, here we go. It's a story that will haunt you long after you've turned the final page.
Dun, dun, dun.
So just that description in the back really interested me and made me want to read the story. And so that's why I recommended it for our podcast, because I thought, and also I thought it was cool that he does everything.
And a kick-ass Latina character, hello. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I believe like he wrote it and stuff like that, but there was also another Brazilian artist or colorist that helped him called Anderson Sabral.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
So I remember seeing this in previews.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I think I asked Eddie to order some because I thought it looked really interesting.
Oh, okay.
And not only that, it seems there's a lot of good talent in Brazil. I mean, we have Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba, the guys who made Day Tripper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was it Day Tripper?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Day Tripper. Yeah.
Or
it's not Twilight Children, no.
No, not Twilight. Was it Day Tripper, or was it like Dream something?
No, no, Day Tripper. They did Day Tripper.
Okay. Yeah. So basically the one that we reviewed here that was really, really good.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so the fact that we're picking this up, and I was very, very impressed with it. I really liked it.
Yeah.
At first, I thought, because I remember skimming through it, and I remember being like, when I skimmed through it, I didn't like the artwork. Mm. But when I actually read it, it grew on me.
Yeah.
I liked it because at certain points, it could be very soft.
Yeah.
And very kind of dream-esque. And other times, basically when they were fighting, it was very guttural and very visceral. And mm-hmm. I ended up really liking it.
I was kind of too, when I just skimmed through it, off. It was off-putting the facial features. They were drawn really
almost grotesque.
Yeah, and uh-huh.
I was
and
about
weird.
To say grotesque.
But you're absolutely right that as I was reading it and kind of the characters themselves developed a little bit, it actually went perfectly with the character development.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I wasn't off-put by it, but yes, I did think the faces were grotesque. But I felt more; it was more like a Aeon Flux kind of feel. You know, kind of like the lengthy limbs and the the pronounced lips.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some of the women at the bar, because I knew this was from Brazil. Some of the women at the bar had scantily clothing and it mm-hmm. sat a certain way on their hips.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was just like really, I really loved it. I loved the artwork. I thought it was just really different and really engaging.
Mm-hmm.
The story itself I thought was really interesting. It's sort of one of those kind of stories that you tell, like it's when a kind of it feels like a folklore kind of story.
It does, and I think that's what in the end really endeared me to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
because like especially with the Catholic upbringing, this mm-hmm. sounds like a story my mom would have told me. Or something.
Yeah,
like to scare the crap out of me or something.
Like the man in the suit, watch out.
So the interesting thing is the back of the story says that her father long ago promised her to the devil, but that's not true. That's not what happened in the story.
Exactly.
He promised his firstborn, which is his son.
Yes.
But at the time, he didn't have any other children, and when the devil came to collect, he ended up having a second child, which was a daughter, and that mother effer was willing to get rid of his daughter to save his son, and the mom overheard him and knew that he was going to do this all along, and had sent her away to boarding school and asked the boarding school, the person who oversaw the boarding school, to train her and be tough on her so that she would be prepared for the day that the devil came and the father sold her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, he's like, dude, I have a proposition for you. He's all like, no, but I'm willing to hear what's up. So it turns out that, like, his wife had complications on the second birth.
Mm-hmm.
So even mm-hmm. if he would want another son, he couldn't have it.
Right.
That mm-hmm. that was his argument onto why he was pawning off the daughter.
He was never going to be able to have another son, so he didn't want to give up the one he had.
But mm-hmm. the selling point was mm-hmm. that the daughter is untamable, even
for the devil.
And that perked his interest.
That perked his interest.
Yeah.
But the rest of the story, it's like it's a folklore in a sense where she runs into these other people. That,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Almost like a. But what I really like, though, is the fact that she ran into other people who had made deals with the devil.
Right. And yes. Like that. And I like that, too.
And I feel like that's kind of very true to form, mm-hmm. in that if you're like on this road, that you're going to meet other people who are also on.
Right, yeah.
And so I really liked that aspect of it. I also really liked the fact that the angel who was drawn in there was a colored man.
Mm-hmm.
He was mixed. I want to say mixed, but he was definitely a black man. Yeah. Definitely playing. And because you don't see that often. Because mm-hmm. most of the time, especially in Catholicism, and still you can still see it, it's almost like they refuse to draw or create angels or imagery that's black, or that's basically anything other than white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And so I really liked it, and I really appreciate it.
Exactly. Well, we don't want to give out too much of the story, because it's a story that you really should read and mm-hmm. absorb all the artwork. Do you guys feel ready to review.
I just wanted to also put it out there that it is only $5.99.
Oh my God, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my and God, that's awesome.
It's basically a full...
It's a full story, yeah.
It's a full story that can end this comfortable, that can end comfortably right there, but is will definitely continue on. But for $5.99, I mean, it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So, are you ready to rate?
Yes. Okay. This is Sarah, and I'm gonna give it 3 conchas because I really like the girl. She's so kick ass, and I love her sass, and I love her dialogue.
Yes. Mm. I liked all of it. I'm also, this is Kristen, gonna give it 3 conchas. And not only was she a badass, but her mom too, for having the foresight to know who she married and what he was going to do, and for wanting to save her daughter. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it 3 conchas as well, simply because I really like the coloring for it as well.
Oh, yes.
And, like, it's very, very well done. And, like, I did like Elizabeth. She grew on me. And I like that she's really, really cool. And the fact that she was kind of giving it away, she was able to tame a demon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Oh, my. Yes. Spoiler alert. But, yes, no, it's a really good book, and for $5.99, yeah, it's a freaking bargain, guys. Mm-hmm. I really think you guys should go out there and buy this for sure. And now it's time for On My Radar.
So this is Kristen, and I have, I've been reading a lot of books, and in a lot of the Marvel books, they are marketing all of the new number ones, again, side eye to you, Marvel, giving me number ones to start all over from the beginning with, but they are marketing all these number ones that are coming in January, and one that really caught my eye is the Black Widow number one that's coming in January, written by Jen and Sylvia Soska. They are known as the Twisted Twins of Horror Cinema. They are Canadian twins who are film directors, producers, and screenwriters. And they, when they were, it's funny, their backstory is that when they were very, very young, probably at an age that it was inappropriate to watch, they begged their mom to watch Poltergeist, and she finally gave in. And after they watched it, they knew that they wanted to work in horror. And so when they graduated from college, they wanted to try to get into the industry, but there was just no opportunities for women. And so what they did was they wrote and produced and directed their own stuff. And they are most well known for their short little story called Dead Hooker in a Trunk.
Yes!
that they wrote and produced, and I believe they might even have acted in. I can't remember. But they do have a little bit of comic history behind them. They wrote issue number 5 of Secret Wars Journal, back when the Secret Wars and all the tie-ins happened. And if you remember, I loved all the tie-ins. So it is being, so they're writing it, and is being drawn by Flaviano Armentaro, an Italian creator, Italian artist. And it's due out in January 2019. So what my big thing is I want to know, and I haven't read any pages, I haven't seen any pages, but it's on my radar because it interests the heck out of me to see what two writers who are known as Twisted Twins of Horror Cinema, what they are going to do with Black Widow.
Yes, I'm loving it already.
I want to read that.
All right, guys, it's time for Juntos y Fuertes.
So this is Kristen again, and I have a really awesome project on Kickstarter for Juntos y Fuertes today. It's called Moonshot, the Indigenous Comics Collection. It's Volume 3. They've already had a Volume 1 and 2 come out, and Jen was mentioning that we actually had them in the shop and that they were really awesome. It's 15 new stories by Indigenous creators from across North America, and the particular theme for this volume is Indigenous Futurism. And wow. the kind of like prompt for the creators was using the knowledge of the ancestors. When you use the knowledge of the ancestors, it is possible to experience history, be in the present, and witness the future all at once. So that was actually really like powerful, and it really made me want to read this and definitely want to put it out there for other people to support this work. It's on Kickstarter, and we can share the link on our page so that you all can find it easily. But it is called Moonshot, the Indigenous Comics Collection, and all of the stories are written by Indigenous creators.
That is so awesome. I feel like we're going to see a lot of like multitude of different beliefs or backgrounds into a futuristic state.
Yes. Yeah.
With a different plane of existence almost.
Which actually kind of plays into the Totec book that we just read.
I was just going to say that. Indigenous futurism right there. That is so awesome. I mean, I would have never have thought of such a subject. So I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, me too.
I am.
How many creators did you say were on it?
There's 15 stories. So I don't know. I'm assuming that's 15 writers, 15 artists, but I'm not sure. There's some could be both the writer and artist.
Or some can have a colorist or a letter on them. Yeah. So I'm going to guess at least 30.
Nice. That's so cool. So we're gonna put up the link to the Kickstarter so you guys can see more in depth of what is offered on the Kickstarter and what you can contribute to it. So that sounds amazing. Thank you for letting us know about that project. It's awesome. So on saludos, this is Sarah, and I'm going to shout out and send a saludo to Yuri and Carlos. They actually had their little baby boy, Theo. And
His name is Theo? Yeah, so cute.
And he's like months old now, but I forgot to mention him before. But if you don't know who Yuri and Carlos are, they are YNC Comics, and they are on YouTube. And you check out their channel. They have all their reporting is on comic book related events, comics, memorabilia, and all of that.
And they're the nicest people.
Oh, they're so awesome.
So sweet.
They're amazing, and they're gonna make amazing parents. They are amazing parents. So yeah, check their YouTube channel out. It's YNC Comics. She says she hasn't been able to record anything since
I saw.
But we hope to see some new stuff from her. So shout out to them.
And when you're saying YNC, it's the letters
Y-N-C.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes. That concludes our episode. Any shout outs, guys?
Shout out to all the people on Facebook who have been interacting with all of our posts and making comments. And I love interacting with you guys, and it makes me so happy when I post something and someone comments or likes or something.
It's very exciting.
So for those of you who haven't, you definitely can follow us on Facebook at Comic Comadres.
And thank you to everybody who reaches out to us on Twitter, because that's how we got to know a bunch of the comics reviewed. And please don't stop. We are always looking for new content, and we really appreciate it when you guys reach out.
Yeah.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
And we've received some emails as well, so thank you for that at comadresycomics@gmail.com. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.